I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm John Holmes. It's The One Show Show, and this is part two of this week's The One Show Show, the podcast that chases The One Show around the playground, trying to kiss it. As ever, if you haven't listened to part one of this week's episode, go back and listen to it. Otherwise, this will make no sense. Starting as it does from where we left off in part one yesterday, my guests this week, the man and Tatitos regular Mark Haynes, and ex-Five Live legend and broadcasting colossus, Phil Williams.
Bofell takes it, goes, this is the nicest thing. I'd be too worried to even, yeah, all right, thank you, Henry, shut up. Because we've got to tell you, tomorrow there's a sex robot going to draw Dara O'Brien. Bye.
But this was at the very end of the show, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And the clue, Emma had given the production team a clue. I don't know if you guys spotted this. Because when she was speaking to him at the top of the programme, she'd said, he's touring, isn't he, with Graham Swann?
Yeah.
Right? And she said, do you have a stage manager that keeps you to time?
Mm.
Because obviously it could be a problem, couldn't it, with your stories?
Yes, good point.
We are quite good at not talking over each other. We sort of seem to sort of sense when the other really has got something to say, and we laugh like mad. And Swanee airs all his prejudices, and I polish a few of mine.
Do you have to put a time limit on it? Because I'd imagine with the two of you, it would just go on and on and on and on, if you allowed.
Out loud, she's saying, we're already over, guys. We're already over.
Yeah,
we're blaming blowers.
Yeah, we know you're a problem. We know you're a problem. For some reason, even though we know you're a problem, we've given you 35 seconds at a time. It's crazy. That show is called Dancing Down the Wicket, which is, that's not a great title, but it's Graham Swann, Swanee. Cricket doesn't have great nicknames.
No.
Swanee and Blofeld going around doing their stories.
Yeah.
The show's called Dancing Down the Wicket.
Oh,
I know. The dance. And we're going to talk, obviously, about Strictly. And we're going to talk about all the silly things that I've been doing since I announced my retirement.
It's a combination of cricket stories and Strictly Come Dancing stories. I thought that seems to me a little bit like you're always going to have half the audience are like, oh, I hope they get onto the next bit rather than they're talking about this boring cricket
story. It really has split the crowd.
Yes.
It's the only common denominator.
We should talk about, I mentioned the toxic waste earlier. Did you see this film? I think, was this on Monday?
Hello. Neighbours. Everybody needs good neighbours. Or failing that, just some neighbours. I mean, we're in the middle of a housing crisis, and yet look, these houses are lying empty. No one in them. There's no cars, there's no bins, no children playing. I mean, why on earth would anybody not want to live here?
Could it be because of this hazardous waste site that's slap bang in the middle of these new builds?
I mean, this was a shocking film in many ways. Mm. So they've built a housing estate next to a toxic waste dump. And when I say next to, I mean around. I mean, it's the middle of the housing. And it turns out there's a housing crisis. We know there's a housing crisis, but it turns out no one will move into these houses because the council that gave them planning permission to build the house in the first place have now went, oh, it's a bit too dangerous for people to even live there.
Even better than that, if you've worked hard enough to buy one of the private houses, you do live there.
Yeah.
But the council have said they're not safe, so we're not going to put any council tenants in there.
Yeah.
So half of them are empty and half of them are people who have bought them and suddenly realise they're living in essentially toxic Avenger 4.
Yeah.
We bought this house off plan. And it was about 30k, less than the competitors, for the same house. I asked the saleswoman at the time, and she said that they were trying to improve their brand, so they were selling better quality houses with better fittings at a lower price. They never mentioned anything about any chemical waste.
It's horrific. I mean, and they went and did a report
And I thought, good, worthy one show, actually valuable sort of... Because I didn't know about this.
Yeah, it was great.
And I think that was that's a shocking thing to have happened, that you built a housing estate around a toxic waste.
A proper scandal.
Yeah,
a proper scandal. The best thing about it was the people who owned the toxic dump, the chemical company, they were interviewed. And you'd normally imagine they'd be going, well, there's nothing wrong with this, or, you know, we comply with the law. They were saying, from day one, we have been telling the council and the developers they mustn't build here.
In 2017, the fire service said the only way to eliminate the risks completely would be to move the site at an estimated cost of £2 million.
We can't afford this, and why should we? We haven't generated this position. All we've said consistently is don't build here.
We are not allowed specifically to smoke or use mobile phones on this site.
Yeah.
Because that is, it's dangerous. Yet over that fence there, where all the houses are, people are smoking and using their mobile phones and doing whatever they like.
The guy from the chemical factory, he said, all we've ever said is don't build here. Yeah. Right. And then they cut to the guy from the council and they were like, so obviously you made a mistake. Credit to him. He was like, the chips are down. It is time to double up and just say I've done nothing wrong. So he just stood there and he just went, no. It was a very rigorous and thorough planning process, actually. There's an absolutely, you know, we went through everything and the whole thing. And they were like, but the chemical guys have been saying to you the whole time, don't build here. And he was like, it was very rigorous, thank you.
Tony McGovern is the head of the local council.
I think most people looking at it would say it's hard to miss the hazardous waste site. And yet here we are. It feels like a big mistake.
The planning process was a very thorough, very rigorous process. Everybody had their say, and there was no evidence at all to, turn this application down.
Did you ask the people who run the hazardous waste site?
So the company objected throughout the planning process, and they said it was a bad idea, but for a number of different reasons.
Like that. If you're on the one show and they're saying you built it around a chemical dump, you can see the chemical dump, and the men who made the chemical dump are saying, we keep on telling them and they don't listen. Don't go
but
on telly.
As soon as he said it was rigorous, because I wrote this down because I was staggered by his response. Mm. This is, let's name him, by the way, Tony McGovern, Cannock Chase Council, right? Yeah. He says, very rigorous planning process, as Mark says. Then he says, but from a council point of view, we would not be happy to put people into many of these dwellings.
Despite this, it gave the go-ahead, but now says new evidence came to light that's been a cause for concern.
The evidence is showing that in certain types of circumstances, there's increased risk to the residents of dwellings that are particularly on the perimeter of the site. There is no garden backing onto the perimeter of Axel at all. So the issue of barbecue risk is not actually a risk that we're particularly concerned about. The design of the flats are that you don't have sitting rooms and rooms that are occupied heavily during the day or evening, facing on to Axel.
And then Matt says off the back of it, we'll keep you updated if anyone moves in soon. They won't, Matt. They won't. Not unless they're filming a Ready Brick commercial.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Matt. Now, the One Show put residents' claims of being misled to Galliford Try, the developers, and they told us that no one had been misled, that the local authority had carried out safety assessments, and that regulators and the local fire service have advised that it's a well-managed site. There we go. We'll keep you updated if anybody moves in soon.
I mean, it was staggering. It was just sort of saying, we said it, rigorous and fine. We don't let anyone live there.
This is one of those funny things as well, where you watch it and you go, it's interesting. But this also put the fear of God into me, where I go, oh, my God, nobody knows what they're doing. All the people who are voted in, they've got no idea.
No one knows.
I mean, I have a funny thing where I tend to, if someone says, I work in the chemical industry, this is my chemical plant, don't dive in it, I'd go, do you know what, I'm probably going to listen to him. This councilman's been like, there's leeway there.
There was a suggestion, wasn't there, in the piece, that the reason why the chemical company said, don't build around here, is because they wanted the land. There was almost a suggestion they were doing it for selfish gain rather than hang on. The clue was provided by a One Show close-up onto one of the signs right next to the front door of someone's dwelling, which says, toxic, explosive atmosphere, highly flammable. And I thought, I just hope Matt Allwright took that back to the studio with him.
Yes.
Annika Rice was on this episode as well, wasn't she?
She's strange, isn't she?
Annika Rice.
Yeah.
Lovely Annika, lovely Annie. Lovely Annie.
Annie likes to tell stories about the business, doesn't she?
Yeah.
As a lot of the projects celebrate their 25-year anniversary, even 30 years, some of them, is that so many of them are still going strong. And thousands of volunteers all around the world are still working on them.
Yeah.
Because we did 62-ish some overseas, Malawi, Croatia. But then because I sold the format to other territories around the world, so they've all done the same thing.
It's funny you mention.
And so it's sort of global.
She had lots of stories about agents and how much other people get paid. That was a great bit when she
just said what Davina McCall gets for a corporate.
I had a boyfriend at the time who was a spy, which was a godsend. Because I'd say to him at breakfast, listen, darling, could you find out today what Davina McCall gets paid for a speaking at a conference? And he'd go, why? And I'd go, just, I need to know, because I needed to have a benchmark for myself. And he'd go, how do I find that out? And I'd go, you're a spy.
Let's remember how weird this is.
Very good.
She pretended to be her own fictional agent for many years, where she dealt with her career through the prism of a fictional agent who was called...
Clemmy
Hart.
Yeah.
Final straw was that the agent said, that's it, you're on your own. And I really panicked and I thought, oh, no, there's got to be someone out there. And I really thought long and hard. And then I found her. She was just this really feisty person who utterly got the problems I was faced with. And I found her quite easily in the end because she was me. So I became Clemmy Hart. For ages, and and it started off quite easily.
So you were doing all sorts of deals.
So
Clemmy
Hart
started off quite easily.
Your alter ego.
Yeah, it started off quite easily because in those days emails were quite formal things, but they got really friendly, and she was very popular. And soon it was, "Hi Clem, why don't you join the BBC Netball team?" Or you know, people wanted to meet her for drinks after work.
How did you get around that problem
of
meeting?
She had to be a tireless campaigner. She worked on all my old challenge projects. She was always running the marathon, having to train after work.
Did you ever nearly get caught out?
Yes, many times when I had to occasionally pick up the phone and pretend to be Clemmy in a very, very bad Scottish accent. And it got really complicated.
And she specifically said, I didn't want to do all these rubbish shows they offer you. They offered me for a lifetime job, curry and rice. Mark Curry and Annika Rice. And she was like, I mean, Mark's absolutely lovely, I'm sure.
But I was never going to do that.
But I don't want to spend my life in a studio in Staines or wherever.
And the final crunch was when my agent at the time said, I've got this great gig, you know, it's your job for life. You and Mark Curry from Blue Peter, curry and rice. And I was going, no, I don't want to grow old with Mark Curry. I love Mark Curry, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But I don't want to
lovely,
go...
He's lovely, as is Christopher Biggins.
Yeah,
brilliant.
Lovely people, but I don't necessarily want to spend my, you know, entire working life in a studio in Staines or whatever it was with Mark Curry.
Burn those bridges.
But the joy of how television works, it's like you can just see, oh, well, that's not changed, has it? Right, we've got someone called Annika Rice.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Who could we team her up... Mark Curry! Curry and rice! Yeah!
Bad news. I'm afraid June Mango chutney is pathetic. Pathetic. Shouldn't have started that joke. Annika is doing stand up on Radio 4.
Yes.
How's that make you feel?
Well, you know, Joe Brown's off now, so they need.
She's worked a long time in the industry. I think it's only a matter of time before it's important that they stick people in comedians' jobs on Radio 4.
That's right.
Should have probably told you this off air, but next week she's actually coming to host this show.
I'm happy with that. Mark Curry's the guest. She's got to bloody put up with it.
June Mango Chutney's here. Again, she's not very good, but she has a very good name.
Curry and
Rice. Do you know when I was at Five Live and John Ketley was still there doing the weather, he said to me once that they'd gone quite a way down the track with television production on a show for him and Michael Fish called A Different Kettle of Fish.
Amazing.
Oh God.
The best thing about that is the word different, which is part of the saying, means that he wouldn't have to stick to the weather and they could do something else. I mean, it really is limitless. I'm a big fan of that.
You just sort of wanted them to go, oh, okay, so Mark, Annika's said no, but what we've done, Mark Curry, is we've got you Mr. Chips from Catchphrase.
Lovely.
Who wasn't there a racist sitcom called Curry and Chips years ago?
Spike Milligan.
Doesn't matter, Mark. Doesn't matter. We've got Mr. Chips and
his Barry Sauce.
Yeah.
We're going to be making this for Grampian.
Annika, we got Dave Pudding. He's called Dave Pudding.
Do I get top billing? Yes, Annika. Yes, you do. Wonderful.
Mark,
stuff.
Good news. Annika can do half the run. So we're going to call it Curry, half Chips, half Rice.
This TV's
development
easy.
Easy.
Just get a punny name and off you go.
Oh, God.
I'm Mark Haynes, and for the last 32 years, I've been a fan of professional wrestling. My friend Pete Donaldson from the Football Ramble he hasn't. But in our podcast, Wrestle Me, the two of us subject the greatest spectacle in sports entertainment, WrestleMania, to the kind of rigorous scrutiny that ruins it entirely. GQ called Wrestle Me enrapturing. Shortlist said it's beautiful. And it's a hit with common people too, with well over 400 five-star reviews on iTunes. Wrestle Me, available from all good podcast providers.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There was a little film in here which I did like, which was A Woman Off Bargain Hunt, or one of those weird ones in the morning where it's sort of a bit tawdry. But she was doing a thing about riots in Luton.
The king had called for a day of festivities, but not every town was in the mood to party.
Here in Luton, the mayor had planned a parade followed by a sumptuous banquet in the town hall. But by the end of Peace Day, Luton would witness the biggest riots in its history.
And they were about people coming back from the First World War and a mayor holding some kind of big celebration. And he decided that the old soldiers had to pay to get in, but his mates could come in free. And there was massive civil unrest.
Soon after, all hell broke loose. Windows were smashed and a hail of missiles rained down on the town hall.
Rioters then used burning peace torches, ironically part of the planned celebrations, to set the town hall alight. By 12:30, the building was a blazing inferno.
Against the apocalyptic backdrop, strains of Keep the Home Fires Burning could be heard. Some pianos had been dragged onto the street from a nearby music shop.
And it is that funny thing. I was watching this and I was thinking, if you did that, like, it was just sort of going, look at the people. They stormed the town hall.
The baying mob hunted for their prey, Mayor Impey, but he was nowhere to be found in the town hall. So a 500-strong gang marched up this road towards the mayor's home in an attempt to flush him out.
They couldn't find him, and so they all marched to his house, presumably to, like, beat the shit out of the mayor. Yeah. And it was funny how the passage of time, when it's 100 years ago, you sort of go, they all stormed the municipal building and then they chased the mayor and they were going to do him up. Doesn't that make us proud of our ancestors? We wouldn't do this about the Tottenham fucking riots, would we? They all marched through the streets and they took what they wanted and they burned down carpet warehouses. And it had a funny sense of really celebrating something which seemed contemporary, which we're not happy with.
Yeah.
I found that weird.
I want to talk about cheese because in this episode, but my heart sank, I know yours did as well, right? When Anita Rani came on to talk about single-use plastic.
Yeah. It really is. Anyway, in just a moment, Anita Rani will be joining us to reveal how much of the UK's plastic has ended up in Malaysia.
So she's done a documentary about single-use plastics, and there was a clip of a woman arguing the toss that the cheese miniatures that she bought, which is like blocks of cheddar, which is pre-cut up into little...
Like the ones you get in sort of airplanes.
Yeah, with your, yes, you're right, in your little snack. Yeah. Yes, exactly right. But of course, they're individually wrapped in single-use plastic. So, yeah. And Anita Rani's job was to go to Bristol and explain to people that plastic was bad in a particular street and find out how much plastic they got and do some research and we got billions of things. Right, anyway, so this woman, though, got really arsey about her cheese.
This is what we're talking about. Yeah. Each individually wrapped, wrapped single-use, and then even that's in plastics.
Yeah. Buy it because it's convenient, it's just as much as I want to eat. And you use what you want, you don't waste any. You're not chucking anything out at all.
But if we were to say, let's try and get rid of single-use plastic, maybe the cheese is the first thing to go. Maybe we start saying, buy a block, don't buy a big block.
I'm going to say no. There ain't no ifs or buts. I want my cheese. Because that's how I enjoy my cheese. Finish, no waste.
But there is plastic waste. Yeah. There's no food waste, but there's plastic waste.
Somebody's got to convince me that to go without my cheese is sufficient enough to go without plastic. I got to go without that cheese. It's going to be a hard argument.
She replied, no buts, that's how I enjoy my cheeses. She likes the plastics. And they went, why don't you buy a big block? And she went, no, to go without my cheese, I've got to go without the plastic. No.
Just no. And then they came out to the studio after the clip and said, well, you know, did you manage to change your mind? And Anita Rani just said, oh, no spoilers, meaning no. No.
She also said, Kay was a big character, which is TV speak for saying she's fucking mad.
She's a fucking
big character.
Planet-destroying cunt.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to ruin what happens, but Kay is a big character.
We're all going to die, and it's because Kay wanted individually wrapped mild cheddar.
Their single-use plastic obsession. But so on back on Thursday, let's flip to that. There was this made the national news where a train model train enthusiasts group
Market Deeping in Market Model Deeping, Railway Club.
Thank you. Had their exhibition trashed by vandals. Yeah. Right.
This was what local club members were faced with when they arrived to add the finishing touches to their model railway displays at the exhibition last month. Chairman Peter Davis was one of the first on the scene.
We arrived at the exhibition hall to be turned away. The caretaker had said, no, this was a police crime scene. We couldn't go anywhere near. And eventually we went in, photographed the total devastation for the 40 or 50 men who by that time arrived to set up their exhibitions. And there were lots of tears, lots. Then the anger set in, and there was a lot of anger.
These guys, these old white men, had spent a long time, 25 years, building up their model railways, right? Big hobby thing, right? So they'd done an exhibition, but the vandals had smashed it. And it was devastating for them, and it was awful. I mean, I remember seeing the pictures in the press, but they talked about this. Loads of people then donated their own Hornby kit for them to rebuild it.
And sent checks.
And sent checks, yeah.
Rod Stewart. Who'd done 10 grand, hadn't he, or something?
10 grand, Rod Stewart, yeah.
And as it gathered pace, the news even spread to rock star Rod Stewart, a fellow rail enthusiast who donated £10,000.
I know Steve Lamack hadn't sent anything, but anyway, he's big into his model rails. But anyway, he might have done, I don't know. Hi, Steve. So they were unwrapping all this stuff.
As if he's going to be listening to this rather than some weird 1984 indie band from, you know, fucking Taunton.
Steve Lamack going through his, and I imagine they are, CDs for his Six Music show, and then just listen to the One Show podcast.
I think this story for me is a test of Britishness, and I find it really hard to understand why I found this so upsetting, watching these men with their railways that were smashed up. There's a thing about German spies in the war. They would have learnt to speak English absolutely from birth, and they would be absolutely perfect at every single word. But there's one word in English which, if you're from Germany, you cannot pronounce. You'd get your spy, you'd be sitting there with, you know, you guys from wherever it would be, you know, Secret Service, and they'd sit them down and they'd go, so you're from Britain? They'd go, yes, I come from Cambridge. And they go, whereabouts? And they go, just a little bit, just on the side of that beautiful pub, and et cetera, et cetera. And you would not be able to catch them out until they'd sort of go, okay, see the animal that's just outside there on the lawn? And they'd go, yeah, I can see it. He's got a bushy tail, eats nuts, they live up the trees. They go, yep, that's absolutely right. That's absolutely right what it is. And they go, what's his name? And they go, we all know what its name is. And it goes, well, just say it then. And the German secret agents would go, squirrel. Squirrel is a word that only British people can say, squirrel, right? It's just, this for me is another test like that. When you see a model railway in like a youth centre that's been smashed up and all the men standing around going, I mean, there were a lot of tears. If you don't go, oh, God, I'd love to kill those vandals.
Yeah.
I don't think you're truly British.
I didn't know what was happening to me, Mark. I'd just had my tea. I'd just sat down to do my homework for this podcast. Yeah. And I'm welling up about model railways.
I know.
Something well, that could not compute.
In any other circumstances, we'd laugh at.
But yeah. I've got a theory.
Oh, go on. Mm.
Right. So, all of those Hornby model railways, as we saw from the donations, arrive packaged in what? Single-use plastic. So I think...
Anita Rani
kicks off. Just got angry.
She went down.
She couldn't take it out on Kay in Bristol and her fucking cheese. So she went off to Market Deeping and kicked the shit out of some Hornby. That's my theory.
Do you know what? That makes sense because if you notice after the Toxic film, right, when they went back to the sofa, Annika was there. Anita's gone. Did you spot that?
They showed a little clip about Anita Rani's house as well. And this is obviously not as good as I thought. I'm not saying it's put me off on Anita Rani. I think she's delightful, but it's slightly put me off.
What were you expecting?
I wasn't really. I was expecting a nice London house. The garden was quite a lot smaller than I thought it would be.
I love it. That's what you've taken for the film.
She's not only a woman on the BBC and doesn't get paid as much.
Mm.
She's also ethnic, so
yeah.
She probably has to pay them to be. You know, the BBC, they don't pay women or ethnics. We know that.
This episode also...
Phil just stepped away from the microphone again. Because of his training.
It was the lawyers.
Before we move on from that Monday episode, where we just sort of like got back to Anita Rani, do you see the Hovis bit they did about the Hovis Road?
Yes.
Where they did the world's most unscientific experiment of all time.
Yeah.
About whether white bread or brown bread would get some children to run up that famous hill in Stourbridge in Devon using the Hovis advert quicker after eating it a minute before.
So the challenge is very, very simple. The brown bread team are going to have brown sandwiches from Lisa. The white bread team are going to have white bread sandwiches from Miley. What have you got in yours, cheese? Don't talk with your mouth full. You've got to push these vintage bikes right up to the top of the hill. The team that wins the most races wins the challenge. It's as simple as that.
Fueled with their bread of choice, the children are raring to go.
On your marks, get set, wait for it. Go! Come on.
They got an experiment and there was nothing scientific about it at all.
No.
Eat children in two teams, eat different bread, run uphill.
What? This is science on the level of Andrew Wakefield's MMR theory.
Go! The white bread team 3, the brown bread team 2. Round of applause for everybody. Well done!
They basically went, what we found out is white bread is much better if you want to run up a hill, so long as you eat it a minute beforehand.
But again, my production brain, I was watching it and my brain's going, what's happened to lead to this? Right, someone from the office going, have you seen it's the anniversary of that Ridley Scott commercial that's really famous? Mm. Oh, yeah, it is. Yeah, what should we do? Well, I know, we could feed kids different sandwiches and literally get them to run up a hill.
What's
the test? Who can not throw up?
What we found out is white bread is officially better than brown bread at whatever the fuck they were trying to prove. much as we can say.
I think it's whichever bakery, there are two bakeries in the town, and they went to both saying, well, I make brown bread and it's better, I make white bread, it's better. So it's whichever one bunged them.
Yeah.
Just went, just say it's white
bread. The white bread one was a sourdoughy place that did look more upmarket, so they would have more of a slush fund for paying off corrupt people at the BBC.
Can we talk about Carrie and Sting?
Do we have to?
Yeah, very briefly we do, because I hate Sting.
Do you?
Yeah, with a passion. I've never liked his faux reggae shtick, and I think he's like a charisma dementor.
Mm.
I think he just sucks out.
I mean, you say he's faux reggae, but hasn't that been balanced out by the fact he's touring with Shaggy? That's given him some real reggae credo.
Good God. But wasn't that ages ago? Was this film sat on a shelf for a while?
They're still touring.
Are they still? They're still promoting the tour. All right, okay. But what was interesting about the introduction?
How is that not 200 people in, like, you know, Leeds? That's all you need. There can't be thousands of people who want to see Sting and Shaggy.
Well, the best bit was when I think it was Carrie's voiceover said, she explained why they're touring, and she says that Shaggy's helped Sting to reimagine some police classics. And I went, reimagine them as what? Shit.
Pretty shit anyway, in my opinion.
The basic thing about this, well, this was all about telling the story of Every Step You Take, the Police song, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah,
and they were all like, we're going to find out why he wrote it, and people have different theories and stuff.
Every Breath You Take by The Police is a song that's led to endless speculation about its meaning. It was written at a difficult time for the band, despite their worldwide success. Today I'm off to meet Sting, who's agreed to open up and share all about this classic song.
And about a third of the way through, Sting just goes, oh, I don't want to explain it, no.
But Sting's reluctant to give the definitive view of what he thinks this song's about.
Because people have so many different opinions, I don't want to contradict that. I love it, and I don't want to explain it. You know, a comedian doesn't want to explain a joke.
You know, it means what it means to people, so I'm not going to explain it.
Because it's about stalking. It's famously about stalking.
Yeah, if you're going to say, we're setting out to explain it, and he goes, I'm not going to explain it, you have to go, OK, film's over, dump,
well,
failed.
She also said in the introduction, which Emma Willis, I think, had on the autocue, she sort of said, she said, this is the latest in our season of the story of the song. And now... Yeah. I've watched The One Show for quite a long time, as have you.
Yep.
I've never seen one of these
before.
You
have. We've talked about them before.
When?
They are scattered over months, but occasionally it'll be Carrie talking to... I can't even remember who she's done.
I've seen her talk to bands where they grew up, like The Alarm in Wales and Rill.
To The Alarm.
Yeah, always back to The Alarm with me. But I don't ever think I've seen a story of a song.
Yeah, I think she's done one... Did she not do one with... Oh, no, Seal was best friends with Trevor Horn.
Yeah.
She's done some weird ones.
She's done music films, like even taking photographers around old haunts of the Rolling Stones on it, but I don't think I've seen a story of a song.
Maybe you're right.
I don't know.
Maybe you're right.
Write in, let us know. Nobody will.
It is just awful. Even if you set out to go, what's this song's about? That for me seems like something that's either been answered or no one cares about.
So, any other business? Anything we've missed? Phil? Yeah, of course you can. Please.
It goes back to Thursday night's show. It's Soccer Aid, it's Lee Mack and Usain Bolt. And the last thing they've got them to do against each other is football darts.
OK, everyone, it's time now for the last of our games. This is football darts.
Sponge football at a Velcro dartboard.
A huge dartboard.
And see who scores the most. And actually, I don't think it was the Velcro one that Matt got wrong. It was the other darts challenge, right?
Mm.
And it was Matt Baker's inability. And I don't know, for the record, I don't know Matt Baker. He's probably a very lovely man. After this, he'll probably hate me. But Lee Mack's throwing the darts, right, and Matt's scoring. And he does say, I might need some help with the scoring here because maths isn't a strong point.
Something we learned this week, Matt Baker's shit at maths.
Yeah. Then he says, and I've written this down so I don't get it as badly wrong as Matt did, right? Mm. Lee Mack throws a treble 20, a 5 and a 1, right?
Mm.
So Matt says, treble 20. 5, 65, and 1, that's 61. Your score can never go down in darts. It's impossible unless you try to throw for a double and you bust. Your score can never decrease, and he's gone from 65 to 61.
He had a real thing where Matt, in the actual football darts, where they were kicking that in, where his finger went to his ear desperately to try and hear what the score was. You know, math's not his strong point. Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah, yeah, I'd struggle with that.
I mean, to be fair, I wouldn't want to score on live television.
No.
Another golden Matt moment just to finish off here. It's after the Hovis point we've talked about already.
Yep.
When it came out to the studio and he went with the smuggest look on his face and he was so proud of it. And he just said, a toast to everyone who ran up that hill. Because it's bread.
Well, a toast to everybody who ran up that hill. Very impressive stuff. Now...
Because it's bread.
Zing. there's a little film we've not talked about, which is called Talk to Strangers, which had a guy called Amar Latif. And he did a great documentary maybe last year, where he went around on a sort of short world trip with Sarah Pascoe. And he's blind.
Yeah.
And so he was like, I want to be a traveller, I want to engage with the world, but I can't do it without someone being near me.
My name's Amar Latif, and I'm a Scotsman living in Yorkshire. And even although I'm blind and I can't see, I do like a chin wag. I'm constantly struck by how people just don't seem to chat to each other. Perhaps they're just too busy on their phones or their tablets. But alienating ourselves from each other surely isn't good for our well-being, because I'm a firm believer that it's good for us to talk. Ladies, would you ever talk to strangers?
It depends who it is, I think, if I'm in a sociable mood.
And he was sort of spearheading a thing called hashtag crossing divides.
That's right.
And this is a nice way of saying what they want people to do is go up to strangers in public and just start talking to them. Now, this had a bit of backlash online, where a lot of women were saying, this is exactly the problem, is that people will come up to you on the train, blokes, and they will start going, all right, where are you off to? And it's really intimidating. I come from, you know, London. I live in central London, and I have a thing about, there are three reasons that people will talk to you on public transport. They want to kill you, yep. They want to have sex with you, or they want to have your money, have sex with you and kill you, right? So when people come over and have a chat, I don't want to have a fucking chat. And there was a big backlash to this, and they were going, go out there, go and speak to strangers. Again, a guy called Mark Godfrey on their Facebook page said, utterly disgusted. All we have been through is don't talk to strangers. Now you're asking us to. Utter disgust in your lack of safety.
Mark, thank you very much indeed.
Phil,
thank you very much.
What a pleasure.
That's it. We will be back with the podcast next week. Please do rate, review and tell your friends about it. Meanwhile, The One Show Show is appearing live. We will be at the London Podcast Festival. This is in the St Pancras Room in London at King's Place. If you'd like to go to kingsplace.co.uk, you will find it. Friday the 6th of September at 7 p.m. Mm-hmm. Myself and Mark and special guests to be announced or auditioned over the next series. We will be there live, so come and see us do it.
Like the fucking One Show.
Yeah, live, live. Should we get Matt Baker on? but anyway, thank you very much. Whatever you do, remember this and remember it well when you look at the television to look at The One Show. The One Show also looks back into you.
GreatBigOwl.com.
There.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Quickly, we haven't got long. Please listen to the all-new Angelos and Barry podcast.
It's a funny one.
Oh, my God, it's hilarious. There's so much muck in it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.